Number nine. There. A workshop for proposed waste discharge requirements for dischargers related to Green Diamond Resource Company forest management activities. We'll start with Ms. Katie King.
Good morning. I am Katie King of your staff. I'm here to talk about workshop item 9, the Green Diamond Forest Management WDR. This order covers all of Green Diamond's forest management activities. Together with the roads WDR, which this board adopted in June of 2010, it will provide complete ownership-wide discharge coverage to Green Diamond. The direction that we have received from this board through the sediment TMDL implementation policy and the work plan to control excess sediment is to use WDRs to implement sediment TMDLs and to develop ownership-wide permits for large landowners, including Green Diamond, to ensure that the highest threats to water quality are within a given ownership are addressed. This order will simplify the permit process and coordinates permitting with other agencies. It's a good permit. It covers a lot of land area. It is protective of water quality. There's a robust monitoring program in it that will tell us about the health of the watersheds in this area and give us feedback regarding timberland management activities and their effect on water quality. It's the way to go with a large landowner, and it reflects a great working relationship that we have with Green Diamond. Here is a general outline for the presentation, and just to remind you, today is a workshop for public input on the draft order. There's no board action required today. We are currently in the middle of the public comment period, which started on August 3rd and goes to September 3rd. Here's some geography of the covered area. Is the green area here, going from the Windchuck and the Smith River in the north to the Eel River and Van Dusen in the south. That's approximately 384,000 acres. And a small part of Green Diamond's ownership, about 23,000 acres, is outside of this area. It's not covered by their aquatic habitat conservation plan. We didn't cover it in the roads WDR, and we're not going to cover it here. Those 23,000 acres will continue to get coverage under our existing permits. They're kind of different. They're rain on snow areas, and so they were just kept separate. Covered activities to be included in the permit include timber product harvest. That includes such things as felling, yarding, loading, road construction, reconstruction, general road use. Silvicultural methods include regeneration harvest or clear cut, commercial thinning, selection, and other silvicultural methods. Timber stand regeneration and improvement includes site preparation, prescribed burning, planting, mechanical cutting, and chipping. Minor forest product harvest of burls, stumps, boughs, and greenery. In-stream and riparian restoration projects involve placing logs, root wads, and boulders in channel to improve habitat. And the incidental discharges from the implementation of mitigation measures themselves are also covered under the permit. With the exception of in-stream restoration projects, these are not new activities. We currently cover them with other WDRs right now, but this permit will result in greater regulatory efficiency. It works together with other regulatory mechanisms, including the roads WDR, Fish and Game's master agreement for timber operations, and Green Diamond's aquatic habitat conservation plan. It minimizes duplication. Here are the existing permits. The roads WDR, together with the forest management WDR, will provide complete ownership-wide WDR coverage for Green Diamond. The majority of anthropogenic sediment sources are road-related and are best treated on a programmatic basis, and that's accomplished with the roads WDR. The roads and the forest management activities are going to remain separate in two different permits because Green Diamond requested that. The general WDR for timber harvest is currently how we provide coverage for THPs for Green Diamond and other timber companies. It's not comprehensive for the entire property. The programmatic approach is better and it's more efficient for a large company. Green Diamond is also subject to the South Fork Elk Watershed-wide waste discharge requirements for Green Diamond. And by incorporating the substantive provisions of that order into this one, we're furthering the programmatic approach. The Elk River is a small part of this order. There's only 1,900 acres out of the 384,000, but it's uniquely sensitive and merits watershed-specific provisions. Key elements that make this permit more efficient are that it is ownership-wide with the roads WDR. It incorporates the conditions of the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan and of the Fish and Game Master Agreement. We've been working with implementation of the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan on the ground since 2007, and many of its management measures are significantly more protective than the current forest practice rule requirements. We are confident in the ability of these measures to address our water quality concerns. And in regards to the Fish and Game Master Agreement, it was developed in close coordination with this office concurrently with the development of the roads WDR. By including the provisions of the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan and the Fish and Game Master Agreement into this order, it makes those requirements enforceable under the Water Code. We further integrate with other regulatory mechanisms by relying on the CAL FIRE review team process. In-stream restoration projects will be the new activity covered by this order, and we want to promote the implementation of these beneficial projects. And by including coverage in this order, it prevents us from having to separately provide coverage for those types of projects, and that demonstrates the utility of the ownership-wide approach. The monitoring program included with this order will enable us to evaluate the effectiveness of the order in protecting water quality and will reflect changes to impaired watersheds. It's much more extensive than what's required under existing permits. As I said, we're going to rely on CAL FIRE's review team existing formal process for evaluating THPs. It provides the opportunity to perform on-the-ground evaluations and make site-specific recommendations. And the water quality concerns that we have identified during that process will be resolved before CAL FIRE plan approval. This differs somewhat from the process that's used for general WDRs. Here we will not be enrolling each plan, but we'll be evaluating each plan for compliance with the order. This process is comparable to what was adopted in the Bear Creek WDR. Non-road sediment sources will be treated under this order. As I said, most anthropogenic sediment sources are associated with roads, but there are other sources that are off of roads, things such as skid trail crossings or watercourse diversions in unit. They're relatively rare, but they're also hard to find. So the most opportune time to find them is during THP layout when the forester is combing the landscape. And this process aligns with how these types of sites are currently inventoried and treated under the existing general WDR for timber. Notices of commencement will be submitted with this order. They're not required under the general WDR, but they're a benefit to us by better coordinating review and assessment of ongoing THP activity. And finally, THP completions and certifications of compliance will trigger another opportunity to do an on-the-ground visit to address compliance with water quality standards after the timber operations have occurred. As I mentioned before, this order incorporates the conditions of the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan and Fish and Game's Master Agreement and makes them enforceable requirements under the Water Code. Riparian management measures include such things as buffer zone widths, canopy retention requirements, tree selection guidelines. Slope stability measures include identifying geologic features, buffer zone widths, harvest limitations, and site-specific evaluations by a geologist. Road management measures include decommissioning and upgrading standards. treatment of legacy sediment sources, hydrologic disconnection, inspection and prioritization. And harvest-related ground disturbance measures include restrictions on yarding, site preparation, and seasonal access. The Fish and Game Master Agreement has general conditions for construction activities at stream sites, conditions for the design and construction of roads and for the upgrading and decommissioning of roads. It has conditions to minimize erosion and prevent sediment delivery from roadwork activity. It provides for extraction rates and protection of aquatic life in the context of water drafting. And it has procedures, oversight, and restrictions for in-stream restoration projects. Every WDR must have feedback through monitoring. I'll start by recapping the feedback associated with a roads WDR. All mainline roads and roads in the THP maintenance period are inspected for effectiveness annually. All secondary roads are inspected every 3 years. Storm patrols occur in the wintertime, and implementation monitoring occurs twice post-treatment at individual sites. That inspection and inventory process feeds directly into a prioritized treatment schedule for roads across almost 400,000 acres. Non-road sediment sources are covered under this order. They're inventoried and treated concurrently with THPs. And as with road sources, implementation feedback will occur twice post-treatment. There's additional monitoring specific to the Elk River. These provisions are carried over from the South Fork Elk watershed-wide waste discharge requirements. There's a master inventory, which was an original inventory of sediment sources that was compiled for the WWDR. The remaining treatments from that inventory will be completed by 2018. Effectiveness monitoring will include long profiles, void volume studies, photo and visual observation at treated sites to provide quantifiable feedback that can refine site-specific measures in Elk. Landslide inventories will occur to identify new landslides and determine if there are changes to the landslide pattern and delivery rates in response to land management. And turbidity monitoring in McLeod Creek will analyze the relationship between streamflow turbidity and suspended sediment. I'll talk separately about the overall effectiveness monitoring plan. It comes from the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan. And the goals are to design, are to measure the success of the management measures in maintaining cool water temperature, minimizing and mitigating human-caused sediment inputs, providing for the recruitment of large wood, and minimizing harvest-related impacts. Rapid response monitoring. It has a time scale for feedback of months to 2 years. It includes such things as property-wide temperature monitoring in class ones and twos, paired water temperature monitoring in class twos, tailed frog and southern torrent salamander monitoring, road management implementation and effectiveness monitoring, road maintenance assessments. Response monitoring has a time scale of around 3 years and includes class one channel monitoring and class three sediment monitoring. Long-term trend monitoring and research has a much longer timescale for feedback, up to decades, and it includes steep streamside slope delineation studies and assessments, mass wasting assessments, long-term habitat assessments, large woody debris monitoring, summer juvenile population estimates, out-migrant trapping, and turbidity threshold sampling. Finally, there's the Experimental Watersheds Program, which allows for additional monitoring and research to look at the interactions between forestry and riparian and aquatic systems. And the four watersheds that are included in this are representative of the different areas of the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan. They are Little River, South Fork Winchuck River, Ryan Creek, and Apaw Creek. Variety of reporting elements plus the ability to require raw data at any time from Green Diamond will give us the information we need to determine compliance with the order. Annual summaries of THPs are required. Post-harvest reports for THPs regarding compliance with measures from the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan. They'll submit a biennial report regarding overall AHCP implementation. And of course, there's monitoring reporting specific to Elk River. This order will ensure the protection of water quality. There are site-specific THP evaluations that occur. The treatment of both road-related and non-run-related sediment sources are provided for. It requires implementation of extensive management measures from the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan and the Fish and Game Master Agreement, and it will further accelerate habitat recovery and the recovery of beneficial uses by promoting in-stream restoration projects. As I said, we're in the middle of the public comment period, which started on August 3rd and goes to September 3rd. Today is a workshop, and no board action is required today. We expect to bring the draft order to you for consideration in October. We have received several comments so far. Some were asking for more time than the standard 3 minutes to be heard today. One comment was related to rate of harvest. We believe that this permit as drafted addresses cumulative impacts, including those from rate of harvest, through required management measures and through the monitoring program. If there's any questions.
That is a very nice presentation, Katie. Thank you very much. There's quite a lot of things going on in this program, and it covers a lot of things. I could see where the word efficiency could come out of this. And for the surety of a company like Green Diamond to operate on that large of a land base with a programmatic approach is that's quite impressive. Any board member comments or questions? Mr. Corbett.
Well, one, I'm very encouraged that the permit's moving, and it's another era, sort of unique circumstances, but this board at the time quite controversially wrote in the possibilities of a watershed-wide or ownership-wide into the waivers and the WDRs, and it's really nice to see something from many years in the past finally coming forward. And the original design was to be both more efficient and accumulative in impacts, and so both in regulatory-wise more efficient from the discharger standpoint and environmentally better than the current system, and I think we're on the way to getting there.
Other comments or questions? Ms. Olson.
Katie, nice job. I just wanted to point out also that we expect the implementation of the waiver to also constitute, for the purpose of Green Diamond's project area, TMDL compliance, both with sediment and temperature-impaired watersheds.
Fantastic. I don't have any speaker cards. I know I actually do have some speaker cards coming. you touched on, Katie, that we have, and I would call Dave Farrell. Dave, you asked for additional time. We will grant you additional time. What I would ask is that our standard time is about 3 minutes, and if you could keep it somewhere between 3 and 10, we'd like to hear what you have to say.
Thank you, Chairman Noren and gentlemen of the board. I also want to thank Water Board staff for their assistance in helping me prepare for today. This is my nuptial presentation. I've been the coordinator for the Mad River Alliance now since June 6, 2011. And my personal background is in watershed science from Humboldt State, and right now, though I am a farmer and I own land on the Mad River, I've lived there for over 10 years now. Today, I'm not being paid to be here. One of the questions I have for the board is, how many of you have been on the board since 2007? I think a couple of you have. Okay,
we all. Not all of us.
So in my process of why I'm here today, I began to try and figure out why there is sediment impairment in the Mad River. And I was looking at some of the background information for the TMDL, and I came across Graham Matthews and Associates sediment assessment, or source assessment. When I looked at that, I began to see that there was this chain of premise from that document to the EPA's TMDL document to the regional board's work plan for sediment control in the basin. And then I started to look at some of the other basins. And I don't know if I can approach the board with this, but in the regional plan, there are these pie charts. And so I started to look through them. I don't have a presentation for the rest of the crowd here, but when I started to look at them, I started to notice that there was a disparity between what was attributed to timber harvest and, you know, sediment as sediment sources to different watersheds. And then I ran into Matt Beflavin's paper, Total Maximum Daily Loads, Sediment Budgets, and Tracking Restoration Progress of These North Coast Watersheds. Is the board familiar with that publication? I'm sure staff is. I've included that in a bibliography that everyone here should have, and I'm requesting that board members review some of those documents. I've submitted those documents to the staff attorney, and hopefully, if not staff, but also board members can take a look at some of these. I just want to read to you one thing from his paper, where he assessed 20 of the TMDL watersheds. Logging sources of sediment average 24% of management-related sediment load. I'm putting into question the assumption that in the Mad River, 2% of the sediment is coming from timber harvest rate. And I'm suggesting that maybe that might be higher. In the group, Mad River Alliance, it's a group of, I mean, fortunately for me, I live near Arcata, and the place, there's probably more fisheries biologists and geofluvial morphologists and geologists and hydrologists than there are grow shops up there. And so, you know, it's pretty fortunate for me that there's this group of people who are sitting in the room thinking about these things. And if you just do a quick assessment and look at the sediment sources from different watersheds and how they're partitioned out, you might notice this too. So I just want to point out a few of the ways that this premise might be skewed, which is based on Graham Matthews' sediment source analysis, real briefly here. One, a primary reason the results may be skewed is that methods used in Graham Matthews and Associates sediment source analysis did not include inventories of small landslides, gullies, and surface erosion from within harvest units. In fact, 2 days ago, I spoke with Graham to ask him that question. I had spoke with one of his field staff, and I said, what is the criteria that you set for discerning from a timber road or a road that's being used not for timber? And granted, 74% of the roads are natural background of this Franciscan melange. And nobody could give me the answer what the criteria was for separating out timber harvest roads and the other roads. So that drew concern. So then another point that I have is when we're looking at the watershed, it's a 500 square mile watershed with 2,187 miles of mapped roads in it. There are landslides that are too small to see with digital elevation models or using aerial photography. So ground truthing has to happen. There was, 15% of the land was ground truth. But I want to point out again in GMA's report that is the basis for all this. Smaller landslides certainly occur at higher frequencies on the landscape than larger ones are visible from air photos. Accordingly, they remain poorly inventoried or missed altogether and thus unaccounted for in the TMDL. Landslides, this is from page 66 of the EPA's document. The landslides smaller than 5 acres could not accurately be mapped given the mapping resolution of the landslide inventory. So landslides and surface erosion is in question here. some of the percentage of those classified as natural, natural background inputs may in fact be triggered by management through tree rot root decay. Now, when I questioned staff about this, I was informed that redwoods don't decompose. But having been a farmer for a while, I do know that pretty much any tree, including a redwood, if you cut a tree, over time, the tips of the roots begin to decay, and that network begins to weaken, and then you have landslides. And accordingly, Klein et al., 2012, states that clear-cut timber harvest, it can affect things in 10 to 15 years after a harvest. So where you're, again, looking at field verification and protocol and how the criterion is met as to what is timber harvest related and what is not is in question. So I'm going to try and speed it up here because I know you've been very patient. Now, I'm sure that staff is familiar with the more recent publications that involve timber harvest rate and their correlation to severe ill effects of fish. And that's really what it comes down to, is looking at how we're going to guarantee that we're not imposing severe ill effects on the fish populations, especially salmonids. So I would like to ask staff and the Water Board to evaluate the basis of the TMDL, halt or modify Green Diamond's forestry watershed, forestry, all these acronyms get me, so their forestry waste discharge requirement, I guess it's called a permit, and I'd like to see an amendment, or maybe it's called a prohibition. There's a section, it's under, past the key elements on the third page where it says silvicultural regimes and methods. What we're requesting is that selective harvest be held to 1.5 or less per year. And that's across the watershed, so in each sub-basin at 1.5%. This is the threshold that's recognized by Klein and Trush in a paper that was actually funded by the regional board, and it's in the bibliography here, Watershed Conditions, Turbidity, and Implications for Anadromous Salmonids in North Coastal California Streams. That was published in May 21, 2008. Subsequent study by Klein, Lewis, and Flavin, February 2012, Logging Turbidity in Coastal Watersheds of Northern California, assesses 27 watersheds and links the harvest rate and type to this turbidity threshold. So I know that a lot of you know this already. So what we're asking for is a modification or a halting of that WDR for Green Diamond, or exclude Green Diamond from the Mad River, those holdings. It's also been requested by our group that in the effectiveness monitoring that does go on once this progresses, that there be a collaborative effort to work with the community groups such as Mad River Alliance, the stakeholders, which includes Redwood Community Action Agency, and I believe they have produced a watershed assessment. They have also produced a compliance plan and a monitoring plan. So those things we'd like to see. I don't necessarily know that I agree with everything in RCA's work, but we'd like to see those incorporated and utilized, as well as working with other agencies. So we'd like transparency also in any monitoring so that it's posted on the regional board's website. We also, in our discussions, have brought up the idea of BMPs for impaired watersheds, since of the 27 impaired watersheds that are listed, any of them that have harvest rates above 1.5% per year are not in recovery. We'd like to hear, or we'd encourage the board and staff to also hear the words from the EPA that suggest This is from the paper that's listed in the bibliography that is from the EPA's comments and rebuttals. It said, this analysis is conducted at the basin-wide scale, nearly 500 square miles, and may not be adequate for site-specific project analysis, such as timber sales. However, it is possible to build upon this information, improving the specificity or making use of new information available in the future to develop project-specific information or to investigate other watershed-wide needs. EPA encourages this use and encourages both private and public organizations to work with the regional board to facilitate and improve upon its implementation efforts in the future. And although the EPA does not plan for further development, individual sub-watershed scale TMDLs at this time are encouraged the regional water board to consider doing so. So to reiterate, I'd like the board to reevaluate what could be a flawed basis for the TMDL, halt or modify the forestry WDR for Green Diamond, or exclude it from Mad River to maintain all harvest rates watershed-wide to less than 1.5% per year in selective cuts, not clear cuts. And three, to work to improve the management of sediment delivery to the watershed by limiting a rate of harvest to less than 1.5% a year or at that in the MAD watershed for all future THPs, not just including Green Diamond. And I thank you for your time and your patience and listening to me. And if you have questions, I'm here.
Dave, thank you. You submitted, you submitted this, your document, I believe, to us, and it's in the record. The public comments open at this time, and I assume you also make that as part of your public comment. Any other board member comment?
Mr. Corey? I mean, my question is, we've had a system in California, individual timber harvest plans, and that's sort of the history behind some of the impairments without getting into whether the impairment designations, how scientific they were. Are you in favor of the status quo versus a ownership-wide permit, that, or is your criticism primarily of the ownership-wide permit?
I believe that Ms. King has put together a plan that will be very effective. I think that in the Mad River watershed, our main emphasis would be to include the concept that harvest rate is possibly affecting things, even though the TMDL document states that it is only 2% of the sediment source in that watershed. It is believed by my group that that is having a greater effect. And if staff looks into the newer work that's been done, and I've submitted that work today, their opinion of this may change. And I do applaud, and our group does applaud, Green Diamond's approach toward a Forest Stewardship Council green certification, and if that is the case, that their business goes forward with that model, this may change if it is guaranteed that our harvest rates are held at 1.5%. And many of their harvests are, but some of them do exceed that, especially in some of the sensitive watersheds like North Fork and Canyon Creek. As you all know, those are pretty sensitive, erodible spots. So I hope I answer your question, Mr. Corbett.
And my next question, the 1.5% is the total cut over the ownership in the watershed per year?
Right.
Just to make sure that's a little clearer.
And I amended the letter that I sent you, didn't have that specified enough. I just wrote 1.5%. So you'll notice the amended letter that I gave to the attorney today does have that inserted in there. So hopefully that's clear.
One last question. Let's assume you're correct that the 2% of sediment is too low. With the exception of the 1.5% cut, which I understand, how would that otherwise affect any of the watershed BMPs? Let's say you assume a higher rate of sediment. How, other than the 1.5%, would that affect any other BMPs?
In Klein's paper just recently published in February 2012 through Geomorphology, there is an array of different facets or management. They would include BMPs, to answer your question. And when he did a regression analysis, he found that the most obvious thing that affected sediment inputs was harvest. So, and given Leslie Reed's work and Tom Lyle's work on roads and inputs and gullying, if there had been ground truthing of that 15% of the 500 square miles that was ground truth, where there were actually transects done, where they got out of their truck and walked through cuts and looked for gullying. And I know that's asking a lot, because I know that the Mad River watershed sediment assessment analysis was very costly at over $200,000. It's one of the more expensive ones out there. But what we're seeing is coho population, last count 2005, according to Gary Flossy, DFG, is at 64. So these fish are in trouble. The population of wild steelhead are actually less than 8%. They're overwhelmed by the hatchery populations, and that's a whole other topic. And the Chinook salmon are also in the hundreds where they used to be in thousands. So our group feels that it's very important to emphasize this point. It is backed up by the literature that I've supported, that I've provided to you today to support it. So I don't know if I can answer any more questions. We might have to bring someone else in who knows more about this than me. I'm a coordinator. I surround myself with smart people. I'm not necessarily that smart.
Any other board member comments or questions? Again, the public comment period's open, Dave. Your comments here today are appreciated. Participate in this. And as it goes, we have, this is a workshop, so there's no formal board action today.
Right. I appreciate your comments very much. Thank you all very much. Staff has my email. If you have questions specific, I can research for you, and I'm willing to do what I can to help move this process along. I'm a farmer. I use the land, too. I completely support Green Diamond doing business in the area. I don't want that to be. This is not their fault. This is, I think, an oversight. The whole document was pushed through. It needed to be done by December 2007, as you probably know. And then 4 months later, we have a regional plan, which is condensed into about 5 pages for this watershed. So I'd just like us to slow down and look a little closer and assess this. And we'll be involved and engaged in the process.
Look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
I have a speaker card for Gary Reneerson. And that's the last speaker card I have. So if anybody else wants to talk on this subject, please submit a speaker card.
Chairman Noren, board members, my name is Gary Reneerson. I'm with Green Diamond Resources Company. First of all, I'd like to thank staff, Matt, Fred, Samantha, and Katie for working with us and working with our folks, myself and Matt House, and also with me today is Matt House and our outside counsel, Wayne Whitlock, who together we've been able to put this document together. It's the culmination of many years of work and builds substantially off of the foundational document, which is our Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan, which we feel is really a groundbreaking plan that provides clear coordination and focus on the aquatic resources and specifically dealing with some audit species. This plan is developed to target sediment sources, reduce current sediment sources, identify potential sediment sources, and treat them and provide for long-term stability of the aquatic resources on our property. And that's really the essence of this plan, and bringing the WDR into this really is one of the, really almost the last piece of having the coordinated permitting through the federal side with the Aquatic HCP, the MADO and the Roads WDR that we were able to do 2 years ago, and now coordinating the hill slope and all the other processes that come to play under the property-wide WDR. So we really appreciate the foresight of the staff and helping recognize the benefits of this and putting it together. This WDR replaces the GWDRs we've been working under. While that process has worked reasonably efficiently, it is still cumbersome. This is a much more efficient way to do business. It's much more efficient for us. It's much more efficient for staff as far as submitting. All the provisions fall under the timber harvesting plan. They're implemented through the timber harvesting plan. All the provisions requirements of our WDR are included in not only the WDR, but the Aquatic HCP are included within the timber harvesting plan. We also have an annual work plan for our roads that follows the MADO and the roads WDR that we submit each year to both your staff and to Fish and Game that identifies all of the road-related sediment sites that we're going to treat that year that we've identified, and then modify that as we go when we find additional sites. We've committed through both the MADO and our aquatic plan and our roads WDR with the regional board to review all of our roads and identify any culvert which has a potential of failure. And if that culvert's found to have a high potential failure, it is replaced either in the year of discovery or within the immediate following year based on climatic access. So that's been a huge commitment. We're in the process of finishing that up now. And then Katie already identified our ongoing monitoring. Every mainline road, every active road gets reviewed every year, and the secondary roads every third year to ensure that they're properly functioning. This is, we really do believe that this is the best way to do business. That before we had to, once the THP was approved, then the GWDR was issued by sending that document to staff and starting that process. This is all done through the timber harvesting plan process and the participation of your staff through that process. Also, it allows for much more efficient permitting of restoration projects. It includes the in-stream permitting process that will allow us to identify opportunities and work with our partners to implement those projects. It has extensive monitoring. Katie did a great job identifying all of the different monitoring we have from the annual monitoring of the roads all the way through our experimental monitoring of our experimental watersheds. Ben, we'd love to have you on a tour and show you all of the full station sampling sites we have and all the different projects that fall under Matt House's purview. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And again, I'd like to thank the board and staff for the support and the insight for recognizing the benefit of these programmatic property-wide permits.
Thank you, Gary. Any comments or questions?
I just want to add the comment that I'm encouraged to see that this has finally come together. It's been a long way, and I know that there's been a long time in developing. We've seen you before the board many times with reporting in on your aquatic habitat conservation plan and trying to find avenues for efficiency. So we're encouraged that this has culminated to this. So,
thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
I too. Thank you, Gary, and the commitment of Green Diamond to bring this forward. I think you really do push the curve of how this can go. And wrapping all things into one package like this on all your permitting, I would imagine, not only gives you efficiency, but it gives you the surety of how you operate in the long run. We certainly have heard from you guys in the past, and Matt talked to us about your road plan. I believe it was 2 years ago, adoption. And this is a big undertaking, and programmatically, it is a large chunk of land that's under common ownership and under very much the umbrella of a program that's very wide, vertically and horizontally, and it just captures so much. So we look forward to having the public comment period, I believe, ends the 3rd of September, and I believe this is up for adoption in October. So with that, then, we look forward to comments as we hear them and final product. We heard comments today, and I'm sure you have written comments, so we look forward to hearing this in the future.
Great.
And we'll see you in October.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Gary. All right. We have informational items from here. There's four of them. I would like to suggest we take a very quick break and come back. Give me 10 minutes. So we'll come back at 11:15 and take item number 10. We'll move forward with item number 10, which is an informational item on an update on